It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is back tomorrow. Coming up, we'll talk to a public health expert about how the new Wisconsin Health Trends report shows some promising news for the Badger State and also shows some areas where we need to improve health outcomes in the state. First, government selling public parkland can be a controversial topic. That's the case with a proposal headed for a vote tomorrow in Milwaukee County. The county wants to sell a 7-acre park near Lake Michigan to one of the biggest companies in the state, a firm that for years stayed out of the headlines and liked to get things done quietly. Chuck Kornbach reports.
Decades ago, Northwestern Mutual called itself the Quiet Company. In 1980, they ran a television ad that began to alter that image.
There comes a time to be recognized, for Northwestern Mutual Life can no longer be just the Quiet Company.
Nowadays, the firm, also known by its initials, NM, is making lots of noise. That's the sound of a new NM office tower being put up on the north side of Wisconsin Avenue in Milwaukee. Just across the street is the county-owned O'Donnell Park, which has a parking garage, pavilion, and a plaza with a view of Lake Michigan. Northwestern Mutual wants to buy the park for about $14 million. But park supporters are not quietly accepting the deal.
This is Lynn and Bob Slater, love from your children and grandchildren.
Virginia Small reads the inscription on one of the bricks on the plaza. Private sponsors of bricks and public tax dollars paid for the park about 25 years ago. Small is concerned what'll happen to the bricks if Northwestern Mutual buys the place. Another park backer, Barbara Aho, wonders what'll happen to the park's layout.
There's lots of native plants, trees, and it's really very sensitively designed and beautifully designed.
Northwestern Mutual Vice President Sandy Botcher says public access would not be lost and the company would spend millions more dollars to spruce up the parking garage and plaza.
If we don't get this space, we will build parking somewhere else, but O'Donnell will continue to be exactly what it is today, a place that is underutilized and in need of repair, and that will be a loss for all of the community.
The Milwaukee County Board is about to decide on the O'Donnell plan, and the vote may be close. Some board members say they flat out oppose selling parkland, worried that eventually the park will disappear. Others, like Supervisor Patricia Jersic, say the $14 million price tag is far too low, and she'd like to amend the proposal. But because Governor Scott Walker signed a law last year that reduced power for the county board and gave it to the Milwaukee County Executive, Jersic says the board only gets an up or down vote.
We really cannot in any way try to amend what many of us see as an extremely bad deal.
But County Executive Chris Abley says selling O'Donnell Park to Northwestern Mutual would be a good deal, generating $5 million to be put into other parks. He argues that all other Wisconsin counties already give the county's top official sole negotiating power.
I know there's this link to say this is all Walker. It's not that. It's just about the way, you know, a legislative branch and executive branch usually works.
The fight over O'Donnell Park could preview other state and national battles if fiscal conservatives try to sell more public land. Mike Carlson of the Madison-based Land Trust Alliance Gathering Waters says one thing politicians should remember is that almost every property is special to someone.
People really do have these really strong affinities and strong connections to individual parcels and have, you know, a really strong sense of place.
And that's what some in Milwaukee say they have for O'Donnell Park. Chuck Kornbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now we're taking a look at a report out yesterday from the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. It's a look at health trends in Wisconsin. And while there's clearly progress in some areas of state health, those good outcomes aren't shared equally by all Wisconsin residents. Dr. Patrick Remington is here to break down the report for us. It's called 2014 Wisconsin Health Trends. Patrick Remington is a professor in the Department of Population Health Sciences in the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison. Pat, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's start with the good news. What positive health trends are we seeing in Wisconsin over the last 10 years or so?
Well, one of the most important measures of the health of a community is how long people live. And we use a measure called the premature death rate measures the number of years of life lost before the age of 75. But the bottom line is that number's going in the right direction. People on average are living longer as time goes on, and that comes from saving lives of young kids, saving lives of teenagers and young adults, as well as older adults.
So premature death rate is declining in Wisconsin.
That's a good thing. That's right.
And what about when we look at things like smoking and drinking?
Well, those are two different measures. Fortunately, smoking has been going down for the past two decades. Some of the policies we put in place in the 1980s and 90s have now gotten good return on that investment. Increasing the cigarette excise tax not only drove down demand for smoking, but also increased resources for prevention services and prevention programs. Also, clean indoor air policies were tremendously successful, not just in changing the norm from a you can smoke anywhere norm to a norm where you expect air to be clear and free of cigarette smoke, but also supported the policies to clean the air, clear the air, so people are breathing less smoke from other individuals. Binge drinking, we've ranked number one in the state, in the nation, not in a good way, in a bad way, and having the highest rates of binge drinking ever since these surveys were done. The good news is that measure is going down slightly, but we certainly have a long way to go by reducing that number further.
And finally, to take another aspect of this, teen birth. What do we know there?
Well, we know that teen births are preventable. There are evidence-based programs, educational programs, and programs that can be done in schools and in communities that work. And the good news is that teen births are going in the right direction. We're seeing fewer teen births, meaning less unintended or unplanned pregnancies. We should remember, though, for teen births and for all of these statistics, that this state has tremendous disparities in these rates, not just by income or race, but also by where you live. So I encourage people to go onto the website of the Population Health Institute to download the report, and you can see these numbers not only for the whole state, but for where you live in specific subpopulations.
So that's all good news that we've been talking about so far. There is another aspect to this, and that is that these positive trends aren't really being experienced equally by everyone in the state of Wisconsin. What have we seen where there are some gaps in health outcomes?
Well, it's surprising. Binge drinking is perhaps the only risk behavior that is regularly higher in whites than in African Americans. It seems to be a behavior that young white males particularly engage in. But many of the other behaviors, such as cigarette smoking and rates of obesity related to unhealthy eating and insufficient exercise, are higher in populations that are predominantly affected by poverty or lack of education. And we see this particularly in our underrepresented minorities in the state. So if you look, it is important to follow the summary measures, the overall measure in a state. We really hope that we're moving in the right direction on all of these important health factors. But it's also important to follow each of the groups by where people live, by the characteristics that define a subgroup in the population, to make sure that everybody's sharing equally in the progress or the advances that are being made.
Now, in terms of pinpointing some of the subgroups, you mentioned income and geographic region. Can you put your finger on geographic regions of the state that need some help when it comes to health?
Well, certainly. And one of the programs the Population Health Institute started is the County Health Rankings. This not only ranks the health of the counties, but it also provides a snapshot for every county in our state. So you can see many, if not all of these indicators. We see overall that the northern counties, particularly the counties bordering the Upper Peninsula, counties in the center part of the state surrounding Mauston and Juneau and Adams County, and then counties in the southeastern part of the state, particularly the urban center of Milwaukee, have health outcomes that are not as good and health risks that are more challenging. You see the suburbs of Milwaukee, Madison, Dane County, some of the Fox River Valley communities, and the counties adjacent to the Twin Cities fare very well in the outcomes, as well as those factors that can contribute to good health.
Now, Wisconsin has been in the news quite a bit lately, in particular Milwaukee, for having disparities when it comes to race. Do you see that same sort of scenario showing up when you look at health outcomes for African Americans in Wisconsin?
Yes, you do. And it's not just Milwaukee. I think the important finding that we see with health outcomes for blacks in particular is that disparities exist no matter where you are in the state. Dane County, for example, has some of the highest disparities in health and in other determinants, things that affect health, like education, compared to anywhere in the country. I've been studying and following these numbers for many years, and it's been remarkable to me that to be a black in Wisconsin means that you are disproportionately affected by some of the greatest burdens, by some of the greatest economic, social factors, and also health outcomes. We don't really know why that is. We don't understand what it is about life in Wisconsin or in some of Wisconsin's community that makes it particularly challenging for African Americans, but we certainly know it's a problem and need to continue the conversation and really get at the root causes.
We're talking right now with Dr. Patrick Remington of the UW Population Health Institute about the state of health in Wisconsin, and we'd like to hear from you on this. Are you surprised to hear that Wisconsin is doing so well in some health areas, including rates of smoking, some declines in binge drinking? Does this report match with what's happening in your community? And when you see disparities and you hear about them, as Dr. Remington is telling us now, does that match also what you may be seeing in your community? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're picking up our discussion about the state of Wisconsin's health with Dr. Patrick Remington from the UW Population Health Institute. And we're taking your calls. Why do you think there are health gaps for different racial groups in Wisconsin and also varied by income and geographic region? What do you think can be done to close those gaps? And what's being done in your community to promote better health? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Now, we were talking about the racial gap when it comes to good health here in Wisconsin. And let's look at some of those other factors you mentioned. You mentioned income, and we talked a little about geography. So let's start with income. What do we know about how income plays into all of this in terms of health?
Well, in public health, we've traditionally focused on things like health behaviors and more of the traditional risk factors. And what research has shown, and actually people understand pretty well, is that those health behaviors like smoking or not getting enough exercise or eating a unhealthy diet are actually the outcomes or the results of other factors that we now call social and economic determinants, or the social causes of health problems. And we've begun to refocus the aim. Not that we're ignoring programs that help people quit smoking or give advice on how to eat or exercise, but we've also directed the conversation toward those root causes. We also use the metaphor of thinking about a stream, where today's problems are really thought of as drowning in the river, but there's some things that go on upstream, further upstream in the metaphor or back in time in one's life. Things like early childhood trauma, growing up in poverty as a child, dropping out of high school, or really being challenged socially or economically. And those factors then increase your risk of unhealthy behaviors, increase your risk of not having the opportunity to get a job and have health insurance, for example. And then it's those factors that are really the mechanisms of poor health. So if you're going to think about a healthy community, you have to not only think about the health behaviors and the things that people get in their healthcare system, but also about the root causes and the upstream factors. And how can we invest in those so that maybe the healthcare system doesn't necessarily spend money on good childhood education or early childhood education or health literacy, but the community should, so that people really grow and develop in as healthy environment as they can.
And that must require a lot of cooperation. You're talking about looking at health as maybe part of the end game, or at least part of the big picture, but you have to collaborate with people to talk about some of those things that are happening, as you say, further upstream. Is that hard to get different entities to talk to each other and come together to find holistic solutions to things that initially may seem unrelated?
Well, that's a great question. And yes, I think traditionally that healthcare has operated in a sort of hierarchical command center. Certainly, if you have a urgent health problem, you want a person who's in charge and really leading from the front. But to get communities to work together, different styles of leadership are needed. Partnerships are an important term now in public health. It's no longer about simply providing services to those who need it. It's about developing partnerships. In fact, in the School of Medicine and Public Health, we have a program called the Wisconsin Partnership Program. The idea is that it's an endowment. It can provide grants to communities, but it also strives to develop better partnerships between people who are working in communities and between university faculty who might be researching and studying those problems. So absolutely, partnerships are an essential thread that really goes throughout all of our work.
So to follow this thread for just a moment, to take a childhood trauma, you said, can influence health outcomes later in life. Can you give us an example of how you might intervene earlier to try to prevent childhood trauma, which would down the road prevent poor health at an older age?
Well, much of the research has looked at what are called the adverse child experiences, growing up in a home that where you may have abuse or neglect. Even parental divorce has been shown to be a traumatic event for children. And not that every divorce ends in a trauma for kids, but that the risk is increased. And interventions that might not be considered healthcare interventions should focus on those young children to provide an environment where they can thrive. So people talk about nurse home visiting as a not only cost-effective but really proven program that can help people who are challenged, perhaps a single parent or a parent or a family that's living in poverty. Also programs in early childhood education. We know when we invest in early childhood education that you see the returns. Kids come to school ready to learn, and then once they're ready to learn, they can achieve good educational outcomes and have a better health down the road. So it's really, again, not only thinking about length and quality of life, but it's also important to think about those factors that contribute to that. And some of them are very direct, helping people manage their diabetes or quit smoking. But others are really more investments in society and understanding that those have not just a societal benefit, but really a health benefit, that you'll lead to healthier populations with less disparity if you invest early in life and in the communities that really need it the most.
When you make those interventions earlier on, those investments in health for down the road, how soon do you generally see a return? Is it sometimes hard to conceptualize because you may not see the return until you've got young adults on your hand, or is it something that can turn around quite quickly?
Well, I think that's the real challenge, is that research has demonstrated convincingly that these investments do return on the dollar, sometimes even $5 or $10 for every dollar invested. But many of those returns come later in life. And so it's hard for people to invest in a family or in a child when the savings are going to accrue down the road. But we really have to be smart about it. If we don't invest in early life course or in prevention, we will be paying the higher costs later on. But it's sometimes not a savings that you see right away.
In terms of education and how that relates to health, what have you seen in your report?
Well, the educational disparities actually are some of the strongest we see. In fact, many of the racial disparities we see, when you look across the same education groups, the racial disparities are diminished, sometimes even go away. So that smoking rates, for example, women who give birth, smoking rates are 10 times higher among women who give birth without a high school education compared to people with graduate or college degrees. That's 30 to 40% smoking rates compared to 3 or 4%. imagine how hard it is for the children in those families to begin life working in a household where a parent smokes, exposed to passive smoke. The only difference in that household is the rate of smoking related to the education of the mother and the parents.
So taking your report as a whole, it's a complex report. There's some good news, there's some bad news, there's different ways to interpret this and different ways to move forward. Briefly here, what do you hope people take away from this report?
Well, first of all, that health is more than health care. That what determines the health of individuals and the health of communities comes from the social and economic factors in your community, education, ability to get a good job, and that we need to consider diverse investments, not just in treatment programs, but in programs that are upstream. The second thing is you can find this report online. I assume it's going to be posted on the WPR website.
We'll have it up on the Central Time Facebook page as well.
That's great. And then there is the county health rankings. If you look at countyhealthrankings.org, you can click on your county and see a snapshot that shows all of the variables for where you live in Wisconsin.
Well, Patrick, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Dr. Patrick Remington, professor in the Department of Population Health Sciences in the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison.